When I was in my early 50s with decades of career success behind me, I started to feel like something was lacking. Eventually, I realized that I wanted to have a young person in my life. And this was a surprise because I had never before given a lot of thought to the fact that my husband and I did not have children. And then I learned about the mentoring program at the UP Center, the local family services organization. Similar to Big Brothers, Big Sisters, it matches adult volunteers with mature role models and friends for kids. It suggests the possibility of gaining a lifelong buddy and the satisfaction of seeing a young person progress. When Mary, the program supervisor, called to tell me that I'd been accepted as a mentor, I said, "Give me the oldest one you've got. You know, I don't have kids, I don't have experience with kids, so I think it would be easier to relate to an older one than to a young kid." And Mary said, "Well, you know, we mainly get younger kids signing up, but let's see who comes along." Well, not long after that, she called me again and said, a social worker had just registered a 17-year-old, and she told me, "You know, we've never had a kid that old join before. Well, can you tell me anything about her?" "Well, let's see. According to our information, Crystal," that's her name, Crystal, "she's not doing well in school and she needs to get out of the house. We've also been told that her father sexually abused her and he went to jail for that. We want you to know about that in case it brings up any issues for you personally." "No, it doesn't," I said. Well, Mary paused and then she said, "I can't explain why I feel this way, and I know I shouldn't say it, at least not now, not this soon, but I feel like Crystal and you were meant to be." I went for an introductory meeting to the apartment that Crystal shared with her mother. Crystal greeted me from the couch where she was sitting. There was an orange cat nestled on her lap. Her mom did the talking, at least at first. "She's talented, an excellent artist. She could maybe be a graphic designer when she gets out of school, but she really seems stuck. She just doesn't seem able to believe in herself enough to study or think about the future. She's failing 11th grade." There was a moment of silence, and then Crystal turned to me. "Would you like to see my artwork?" "Sure, that would be great." She put the cat down on the floor, left the room, and came back with a notebook. "Vivid flowers, eye-catching abstract patterns, a self-portrait so lifelike it was hard to stop comparing it with her face. Wow, you really are talented," I said. "Thank you," she said softly. She left the room again and she came back in with a small black box. "I need to show you how to use this in case something happens while we're out together." She clicked the box open. "This is my diabetes kit. I'm type 1, and I carry this in my purse all the time. If I start to go into DKA, take out this insulin pen, stick the needle into it, and jab it in my thigh like this." She sort of executed a series of maneuvers I really didn't follow. "What's DKA?" I asked. "Diabetic ketoacidosis. They used to call it diabetic coma." "Well, how would I know it was happening?" "At first, I'd feel nauseous. And I'd probably know to inject myself, but if I missed the early symptoms, I might start saying things that didn't make sense, and then I might start arguing with you, and I might even fall down. And that's when you should do it. Because if you don't, I could die." Sure, I said, vowing silently to call 911 instead if this ever happened. Crystal lived a mile from the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel, but she wasn't sure where it was. She adored animals, but she'd been to the zoo just once. That was in elementary school on a field trip. Her art talent had earned her admission to the governor's school, but she didn't go, and she really wasn't able to explain to me why not. She had smoked weed when she was younger, but she stopped. She didn't believe in drugs. If she had a daughter, she would name her Aurora. That was the most beautiful name she'd ever heard. Crystal revealed glimpses of herself to me as we took our weekly outings. It was a really slow process, long silences in the car. But I kept arriving every weekend, and she'd be waiting for me. And together, we'd go to places that were new to her, and that made them new to me, too. The Color Me Mine pottery studio in Ghent, the Dart Center, on a tour of the costume shop at the Virginia Stage Company, to Virginia Beach to pick strawberries, to Chesapeake to wrestle pumpkins off the vine. And at her shy request, we went to the zoo, where she photographed every beast and bird. Is it okay if I plug my phone into the dashboard? She asked me one day as we were driving along. I'd like to play some music. After a few songs, she began singing along. This became a custom. Her tastes ran from pop to country to heavy metal to rap, even a Cher hit from before she was born. She didn't care for songs with four-letter words, unless they were used artistically to express, you know, anger or despair. She was gentle in that way. If you asked her a question while she was eating, she'd carefully cover her mouth before responding. She addressed older people as sir or ma'am. Once we were in line buying movie tickets when a man on crutches in line next to us dropped a crutch, and without a word, she stooped and she picked it up and she helped him fit it back under his arm. She dominated the grabber machine, you know, that arcade game where you put a dollar in and that buys you the right to maneuver a joystick over a mountain of stuffed animals to try to pull one out. Before inserting the money, she'd eye the pile from every angle, like a golfer lining up for a putt. Once she took 5 teddy bears in a row out of the machine at Military Circle. I had to help her carry them out to the car. When the new academic year began, she enrolled in the Norfolk Public Schools Dental Assisting Program, thinking that the artistic abilities of her hands could help her eventually become a dental hygienist. She started getting A's. She made an impromptu speech in front of her class. This was the first time she had ever dared such a thing. And all of that time, I never had to call 911. She measured her blood sugar, often sitting beside me in the passenger seat, and she would inject herself if needed. On our way to a dog show in Virginia Beach, we stopped at IHOP. After our breakfasts arrived, Crystal said, "I don't think I can eat." "Why? What's going on?" "My eye hurts too much." She pointed to the right side of her face. The eyelids were puffy. Doctors had told her it was allergies, but allergy medication wasn't helping. We got boxes for our food and I took her home. The following Thursday, my phone rang. "I won't be able to get together with you this weekend. I'm in the hospital." The eye pain had gotten worse. The whole upper right quadrant of her face swollen grotesquely. Her optic nerve was affected. She'd lost vision on that side. "Allergies had nothing to do with this," the hospital's physician said. They were doing tests. They even ran a spinal tap. Boy, did that hurt. But they couldn't find the cause. They treated the symptoms with intravenous steroids. That reduced the swelling and relieved pressure on the optic nerve. This restored her vision, relieved the pain. And then to cap off that treatment, they sent her home with a 2-week prescription for oral prednisone. A month and a half later, she was still taking prednisone. Each time the prescription ran out, her eye would start to swell, her face bulged. Excruciating pain would shoot through her forehead and down the side of her face. The source of the problem remained unknown, but prednisone was the only thing that controlled the symptoms. It gave her a headache. The other effects became obvious when we went to a movie, and she started jiggling her leg up and down, up and down, up and down, faster and faster. And then she sprang up and she left the theater, came back in a few minutes ago, and started jiggling her leg again. This happened 4 more times before the movie ended. Then, in the weeks that followed, she began to mention fights with her mother, Crystal unleashing torrents of rage over matters that sounded really trivial to me. A few days after she turned 18, she called to say, "You need to come to a different address when you pick me up this Saturday. I've moved out of my mom's place." "How did that come about?" I asked. She was arguing with me about the laundry, and I said, "I'm an adult now, and I don't have to take this anymore," and she left. Her boyfriend's grandparents had agreed to let her move in with them. They put a mattress down for her on the floor of their den. She could stay as long as she wanted, as long as she went to school, Granby High was just a mile's walk from their place, and she helped with chores. Crystal attended school every day at first, and then she missed a day, and then she missed more. Another lodger in the house complained that she wasn't doing housework. She was told to leave. She moved into the apartment of a man she considered a friend, and then it turned out he wanted more, so she left. Then it was on to the home of a friend of a friend, but she heard gunfire, and she left that place too. Reuniting with an old boyfriend, she moved in with him and his mother. She could stay if she went to school, and she helped around the house. She now lived outside of Granby's district, the district for Granby High School, but she refused to go to a new high school. She asked the mentor program if it could provide a city bus pass so she could go to school. Without telling her, I donated money to pay for it. Mary, the head of the mentor program, devoted an entire day to showing her the bus routes and even riding with her so she could practice. The following day, Crystal took the bus to school, and then she never went back. Not long after that, the boyfriend's mother said, "You're out of here," and she had to leave. And so she shifted from place to place. Sometimes she'd scrape together enough money to check into a low-priced hotel. Often the walls of her room had holes the size and shape of a fist, testimony to the rage and despair of previous occupants. But more often she'd meet a new boyfriend and move in with him. It was really tenuous. All one had to offer was half of a pull-out sofa in a small house crowded with other unmoored young people. They held drug-fueled parties that Crystal abhorred. Mary found a local program in which a social worker would help Crystal secure a place to live, look for work, even drive her to appointments, but Crystal refused the offer. "I'm working on the housing situation," she told me. "Think I have it taken care of this time." It turned out she moved in with another man, and along with his mother. He lived with his mother. A month later, he slammed Crystal against a door frame, and she fled during the night. I began to count the number of places that I went to pick her up, but I lost track after it passed 15. I couldn't provide her lodging, but I often bought her groceries and would pay for her medications. But even so, she often didn't have what she needed, and the chaos compounded with the steroids fueled vicious infections. She spiraled down towards DKA more often. She developed gastroparesis, a poorly understood condition in which the stomach doesn't empty properly, and it is very, very painful. Because she had no health insurance, she would wait until her various symptoms became unbearable, and then she'd go to the emergency room, and then after that, usually into the hospital, sometimes for a night, once as long as 2 weeks. One day, Crystal texted me and said, "I have a job." "Great," I responded back, texting her back. "What is it?" "Well, I'm not proud to tell you this," she texted in response, "but I'm dancing in a bar." "Well, that's nothing to be ashamed of," I replied by text. "It's work, and I'm sure it's not easy." She wasn't a stripper, she emphasized when we next saw each other. She was a go-go dancer. She wore a bikini and she swung around a pole, performing gymnastic-style tricks and encouraging men to throw cash onto the stage. In between her 20-minute sets, she was expected to mingle with the customers, make them feel at home, and then egg them on to buy more drinks. It wasn't easy, but she stuck with it, taught herself new moves, attracted a group of regulars. Sometimes when she had a late afternoon shift, I'd pick her up at the bar afterwards to go out on an outing. Waiting for her in my car, I'd read the New York Times on my phone as lone men walked by and disappeared through the front door. Then she'd come out wearing a sweatshirt and jeans and sneakers, as though she'd just finished soccer practice after school, a gym bag filled with her bathing suits, fishnet stockings, and stiletto heels slung over her shoulder. Once we went directly from her go-go dancing shift to the drive-through holiday light display at the Norfolk Botanical Garden. She took photos and munched on chicken tenders I brought her as we glided along the twinkling paths. She was 21, and I was driving us to paint pottery at the pottery studio in Ghent when she said, "I really feel anxious. What's going on? My father's getting out of prison. He's been here all that time, all this time?" "Yes," she said. "He went to jail when I was 10, and he got an 11-year sentence." "I've never known much about what happened," I said cautiously. "I know he sexually abused you, but I've never wanted to bring it up, unless you did." "It's okay. You can ask me about it." I pulled over and parked. "How old were you when it happened?" "It started when I was 4, and it lasted until I was 6. She went on to say that to ensure her silence, her father would demonstrate the violent power of his fists in front of her. "This is what you'll get if you say anything to anybody." "Why did it stop when you were 6? "My parents split up and he left." After her father moved out, she still said nothing about the abuse until she was 10, when her father was arrested for forcing another little girl to watch pornography. This unleashed a torrent of repressed memories for Crystal. She told her mom what happened. Her father was charged with those crimes too, and he was sent away after Crystal testified against him. "I wish you hadn't had to go through all of that," I said. "I wish you could have grown up with a great dad." "It's all right," Crystal said. "In a way, I'm actually glad." "Why?" "Because now I know how truly evil people can be." When her father was released from prison, he was banned from using electronic devices or getting on the internet. Less than a week later, he set up a Facebook page in the persona of a teenaged female and began trying to friend young girls. Police arrested him, and he faced a raft of new charges. Crystal and her mother were asked to attend his court hearing to provide background information. "The prosecutor from when I was a kid volunteered to come with us, to sit with us," Crystal said. She said mine was the worst case of sexual abuse she's ever seen. But even with that promise of support, Crystal was distressed. "It means I have to see him again. I mean, I haven't seen him since I was 10, when they took him away." Well, surely they'll give your dad, your father, a really long sentence for this," I predicted. "You'll never have to see him again after that. I mean, I bet they send him away for life." "I hope so," she said. He got 10 years. After the sentencing, Crystal started losing weight. "Her gastroparesis was worse," she said. "I take a few bites, and my stomach starts hurting, and I just can't eat anymore." She'd been dancing at the bar for more than 2 years, and she took great pride in this longevity and being the veteran who showed the new dancers what to do. But now she stopped. "With my weight so low, my tailbone hurts if I have to lie on the stage as part of a trick, and I just don't have the strength." She and I, we went to a lot of movies. She liked them, and it was easy for her. All she had to do was relax back on a soft padded seat and gaze at the big screen. En route to see Mamma Mia, "Here We Go Again," she said, "I've stopped thinking that being with a guy is the answer to my problems. I know now I need to understand myself first." "Oh, Crystal, I'm really happy to hear you say that. You're talented, you're smart, you're amazing in every way. You've just turned 22 and you're at such a great age. You've got your whole life in front of you." A few weeks later, Crystal settled into my passenger seat, and then she announced, "I have a kitten." "Wow, how did that come about?" I asked. "Well, I saw something moving under a car in the parking lot here, and I stooped down and I looked, and it was a kitten. It was barely more than a newborn." She took the kitten up to her room in the apartment she was sharing platonically with a previous boyfriend, and named it Aurora. She was spending what little money she had on its care. A few weeks after that, when I dropped her off, after an outing, she said, "Would you like to come up and meet Aurora?" She showed me to her bedroom. I perched on a chair. Crystal sat on the bed, and we threw toys, and we dangled strings, and we laughed, and we laughed until Aurora tired out and fell asleep on Crystal's lap. A month later, during the night, Crystal was alone in that bedroom when she went into DKA. It surged so fast, she may not have realized what was happening when it took her life in just a few hours. When I say she was alone, I mean that no human was there. The EMTs and police found Aurora in the room. I don't know. I'll never know. But I like to imagine that Aurora was snuggled up against Crystal when she took her last breath. 4 days after Crystal's passing, her mother and I sat together for an afternoon to talk about Crystal. We just sat there talking and remembering and crying. 6 days after that, Mary, with the mentor program, and I went to Norfolk's animal shelter. That's where police took Aurora after they found Crystal. Mary adopted Aurora. She sends me photos. My favorite shows Aurora sprawled in the arms of a little girl that Mary is mentoring. Girl and cat clearly delighted with each other. 2 weeks following Crystal's death, Reverend Justine launched her Spirit in Practice class here at Seaview. Over the course of 5 Saturday mornings, 20 of us from the congregation delved into the hard question of what spirituality is for Unitarians. Reverend Justine encouraged us to consider what experiences make us feel alive. At first, I really struggled to understand how that relates to spirituality. I mean, okay, I feel alive, so that's nice, but really, so what? But I came to believe that feeling alive signifies that something, some person, some experience, some moment has ignited the spirit within us. And that's why I'm telling you this story. You see, I signed up for the mentor program because I felt a void. The things it seemed to offer to fill it, the lifelong buddy, the satisfaction of seeing a young person progress, well, I didn't get those things. But it turns out that wasn't the point. During the 5 years that Crystal opened her life to me, from the age of 17 to her passing at 22, I felt joy, surprise, hope, connection, as well as frustration, annoyance, disappointment, and then agonizing loss. I felt alive. It was a profound and powerful spiritual experience. Perhaps you feel emptiness, something missing that you can't quite define. Pay attention to that feeling, because it could mean that there's room in your life, in your being, for something more. To fill that void, you might have to try something that you've never done, and it could be hard. It could be very hard. What you get from it might not be what you expected, but possibly, probably, the experience will set your spirit ablaze in ways you never imagined. Thank you, Crystal. I miss you.